You are listening to Sean of the South. We are coming to you live via the podcast airwaves and via the radio all over the nation right now tonight. That music here behind me right now is Stuart Mason and Little Black Train.
Well, I'm going to leave this country. I'm going to go
a little bit about mail tonight. A little bit about mail sent in to us from listeners all over the nation. All over the nation, our first message comes from Nancy Jernigan in Mamers, North Carolina. Sean, I was in an antique store a few weeks ago when I found an antique copper still for making moonshine. Now, I grew up strict Baptist, but I decided I wanted to give this a shot because I've always wanted to try it. I'm in my 60s and I figured, why not? I'm through impressing people. So I made my first batch of moonshine, and man, it was good. I let my relatives try it, and all my relatives say I have missed my calling. I even gave my nephew a little bit, who is in seminary, to become a Baptist minister. He took one sip, and his face got real red, and well, let's just say that he was instantly filled with the Spirit. Margaret Fish, Beaumont, South Carolina. My son decided to take up an instrument since all his friends were learning how to play guitar at this age, probably to impress girls. But he don't want to be like everybody else. He never has. And so he was online researching which instrument he wanted to take up. and he finally settled on the harp. The only thing was, harps are ridiculously expensive. I don't know if you know that, Sean, but they are in the thousands, sometimes the tens of thousands. So my dad and my son ordered a wood kit online, which was way cheaper. And they built the harp out in his garage. It was the most precious thing. My son is really practicing it now, and it sounds really good. My son, the harp player. Sally Isles Rucker, Olathe, Kansas. When I was riding past a busy intersection, I saw this guy running across the road wearing nothing but his underpants. He was a young guy, and he had nothing on but his tighty-whities and a pair of work boots. And naturally, since I'm in my 70s, I pulled over and offered him a ride. He was embarrassed, and it turns out he was working on a construction site nearby, and the whole porta-john fell over with him in it and ruined his clothes. He had to throw his clothes off and go home instantly, but because the construction crew parking was across the street, he had to run his car across a busy intersection. Lucky me, he wasn't bad looking, I have to say. Randall Brannon, Mossy Head, Florida. Sean, I miss listening to the radio with my grandmother. We used to listen to the Opry for a long, long time. And when she passed, that tradition just kind of passed with her. I guess I miss the old days, and I guess that's kind of what I'm writing about. Maybe that means I'm getting old. Anyway, thanks for the show, your friend, Randall Brannon. Billy Forsyth, Detroit, Michigan. Sean, there were a few guys who came to my granny's porch this week, and they were wearing neckties, and they were carrying Bibles, and my granny came to the door wearing oven mitts and holding a spatula. She's a no-nonsense woman. She invited them in, and she put them straight to work in her kitchen. They all made a whole bunch of oatmeal raisin cookies and banana bread and all sorts of other things, and then she sent them on their way with all sorts of Ziploc bags full of food. When Granny told us this, we all died laughing, because that's just Granny. We asked if they had actually tried to convert her or get her to join their church or anything, and she said no. No, they just told me they were glad not to be walking the streets and sweating all over their clothes for a change. Renee Livingston, Hoover, Alabama. Shauna wanted to say happy 32nd birthday to my daughter, Lacey. She's the best thing I ever did in my life. I adopted her when she was only a one-year-old. I'm so glad I wasn't able to have kids so that I got to know the most beautiful girl in the whole world. Sometimes God gives you what you need instead of what you want. Happy 32nd birthday, Lacey. Happy 32nd birthday. Linda Wolf, Shanghai, China. Sean, I'm in China with my husband for work. I probably get the award for the farthest reaching listener, don't I? Anyway, I desperately miss Atlanta, Georgia, where I was born and raised, in the Jonesboro area. And if you can believe it, I even miss the traffic. Keep making me feel like I'm back home with your shows, Sean. I love you for it. Thanks a lot. Your friend, Linda Wolf. Dear Linda, thank you. Thank you, and I love you too. Anthony Haynes, Hot Springs, Arkansas. Sean, somebody told me about your show, and I'm glad they did, because I get sick of listening to the modern music that's coming through the radio, and that seems to be all that's on the radio when I'm in my truck on the way to work. Music really sucks today. So thanks for the bluegrass, and thanks to everyone who's trying to keep that old-time music alive. Bailey Berkman, Grove, Oklahoma. So my husband and I are full-time RVers, and we've visited just about every state in the Union. Just about. We have not visited Alaska or Alabama. Go figure, two states that start with the A, except Arkansas. This year, we're going to change all that. So wish us luck. It's a long, long drive from Alaska to Oklahoma, so maybe we should start with Alabama first. James Williams, Pittsburgh, Kansas. Sean, I was on the way to work today, and I passed a woman. She was walking along the road with a backpack on. She was an older woman. She had gray hair, and her clothes looked very, very old. I offered her a ride, but she did not want one. So I offered her money, but she wouldn't take it. So I offered her a bottle of water, and she sat there and she drank it all in front of me, the whole thing. She looked so thirsty. Then I rode on ahead a little ways, and I turned around because she was heading in another direction. I had to pull off the road to get to her. And when I rode by where she was when I'd seen her, she wasn't there, if that makes any sense. I have no idea where she went. There's nothing out here but wheat fields and corn. Maybe my mind's playing tricks on me. Do you ever get the feeling that you're going crazy? I don't know. Maybe you already think I am crazy. Dear James, I get the feeling that I'm going crazy every day. But in your particular case, all I can say is, why question it? Cynthia Lewis, Mobile, Alabama. My aunt is turning 80 today. 80 years old is a milestone for her. She's fought a lot of illnesses to get here, and she deserves something big. We're going to take her on a cruise, I think, or maybe a resort that's all-inclusive. I don't know. Just please give her a shout-out. Her name is Nana Taylor. That's what we all call her, Nana Taylor. So happy 80th birthday to Nana Taylor from everybody here tonight. And that's letters from our listeners. Let's have another tune from Stuart Mason and Little Black Tramp.
Beautiful time of year. Beautiful time of year when summer is starting to end. And children are starting to go back to school. Children going back to school is a bittersweet thing. Parents are excited about this, and they're also a little bit sad because it means their child is taking that next step upward on the staircase of life. And that is a wonderful thing and a sad thing, because with each step they get a little bit further away from us. They get a little bit further away from us, and then they become more an adult. They start to say things that are adult, and they start to understand things that you say when you're trying to speak in secret. And they all of a sudden they can learn how to spell words that you have spelt to your spouse when you're trying to hide things from them. They become expert spellers. This is what you pay the teachers to teach them how to do. But there's also a whole lot of underlying excitement going along with this new school induction part of the year. This is the time of year when parents find excitement in even the smallest thing. Like my cousin, he was a man who was trapped this summer. He had children always with him, three children at a time. Wherever he went, they were always there. I was in the minivan with my cousin. We took a short drive to Atlanta, Georgia, and my cousin said, watch this, just listen for a little bit. And my cousin's son in the back, he finally looked up from his iPad. He said, hey dad. And my cousin looked at me and he raised his eyebrow. He said, can you believe that joker? And he didn't say anything, and after 22 hey dads, my cousin finally said, what is it? And my cousin's son said, well, it's too late now. We already passed it. These are the joys of parenthood, I assume. Of course, I don't know this for certain because I don't have any children. I do know that once my cousin and his wife, Julie, sent his children back to school this year, they called me over. I had to come pick up a bag of dog food. My cousin's wife, Julie, can get it cheaper than I can get it. And so I went over to their house at 9:30 in the morning. They were sitting at their dining room table, and they both had these pedestal glasses filled with daiquiris. My cousin said, why don't you come on in here and have yourself a daiquiri? I said, it's 9:30 in the morning. He said, today's the day school started. I don't drink in the daytime. I don't drink at 9:30 because I was raised just like my cousin, Southern Baptist. And the only time we drink before the sun has hit noon is when we are fishing with an Episcopal. My cousin was in love with Julie for a long, long time. He met her in VBS a long time ago. They helped run some of the games together. VBS games are the joy of summer. To watch a child with a spoon held between his teeth and an egg held in the mouth of that spoon, and that child runs across the church lawn trying not to drop that egg. That is VBS. And my cousin and I were volunteers for that VBS. Now, we did not spend a whole lot of time in the church youth group volunteering for such things, but this year was different because there was a girl from out of town with honey blonde hair that hung partway down her back, and she always kept it in a braid. And her name was Julie. And my cousin was smitten with her from the first time he ever saw her. And so he took me to youth group, and we walked into youth group that first night to be oriented to become VBS volunteers. And the youth pastor stopped my cousin. He said, oh my God, you know, we have prayed for you to come to youth group for many years and you never did. My cousin seemed very uncomfortable. He said, you did? He said, oh yes, you've been on the top of our prayer list. He said, I wonder if you wouldn't mind leading a prayer for everybody here tonight. We're just so glad to have. My cousin looked at me, and I looked at him, and I shrugged my shoulders. My cousin never prayed in public before, and neither had I, and so this was a very, very strange place to be, but he did want to be noticed by Julie, so he took that pulpit in the chapel, and when it was time to pray, everybody bowed their heads, and he said, My Lord, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Lord of my father's pride, Lord where the children cried, of every mountainside let freedom ring. And I stood up and back and raised my hand and said, play ball. And thus we became VBS workers, but my cousin and Julie spent more time behind the church, just beside the outhouse, which was no longer in use, which hadn't been in use since the days of William Taft's presidency. And they'd engage in moderate petting, which is really just hand-holding and a little bit of kiss, and this is what 15 and 16-year-olds do. And at the end of the summer, Julie's family left to go back home where they was really from. They were only spending the summer with us. They left to go back home to Hope Hole, Alabama. And my cousin hit the recesses of depression such as never before witnessed in our county. He reclined in the corner of his room, sitting on his bed, and he would pitch a baseball at the ceiling where the ceiling meets the wall. And it would bounce off the ceiling, then bounce off the wall right back into his lap. And it would make a sound, ba-bum, bum, ba-bum, bum. And he did this for hours in the day, just a-pouting. And I came over to visit him, and his mother was standing outside the door. She said, I just don't know what's wrong with him. He's got 2 weeks of summer left, and he is just a miserable in there. Maybe you can talk to him. Well, I don't have much to say in situations like this because I didn't have a whole lot of experience. I had only ever held a hand with a girl. I'd never kissed her. I'd never actually been in love. I'd only given Anna Masters a pencil that had an extra long eraser on the end. And she said, does this mean that we're going together? And I said, I reckon it does. And so we just kind of became an item. But we never did anything about it. We never did anything official about it. But this what he was experiencing was different. This is what 16-year-olds really experienced. This was love, his first taste of love. And he said, I feel like I'm going to die without Julie around. And I just listened. I tried to put myself in his shoes and understand what he was feeling. The closest I could come was at the end of every baseball season, when baseball was no longer on TV, I felt probably the same way he was feeling. And so I came up with an idea. I said, how about we go visit her? And he sat up in his bed. He sat up in his bed and he threw his baseball glove beneath his mattress. He said, you think we could? I said, yeah, why not? Why not? Go visit her. My cousin was excited about this because not only had this been the summer that he'd first fallen in love, this had been the summer that he first got his 1982 Ford truck. It was red except for the doors, which were primed gray. They had been salvaged from another 83 Ford truck in the junkyard in Andalusia. And he had put these on his truck, and this thing had two-tone doors, and everybody tried to get him to paint them, but he said he kind of liked the way those gray doors looked against the red. And everywhere he drove, ever since he'd met Julie, he had this ribbon hanging around his rearview mirror, red ribbon. It was her hair ribbon. She'd given it to him. And sometimes he touched it for good luck. He touched it for good luck, or he'd just work it in his hands. But it always hung in his mirror so he could see it. So he could see it. He was turning into a lovesick fool. We got our mothers together, and we asked if we could go out of town to Montgomery, Alabama, around Hope Hole, to visit his girlfriend, Julie. And they looked at each other, our mamas, and they knew that we were boys who probably ought not be by themselves. But they knew how much he loved Julie. They sure did. And so, out of pure mercy, they were willing to let us go. They were willing to let us take a road trip. And so we loaded up his 82 Ford with all sorts of stuff, with bags and camping gear and a propane burner for we could cook meals on. And our mothers gave us paper sacks full of all the fixings. My mother gave me a shoebox full of fried chicken And my cousin's mother gave him a pot roast, which had been sliced real thin and made into sandwiches. And there were jars of jelly, and there were piccalilli relish bottles. And my mother and his mother had both given us a $10 bill, and they made us keep it in our shoe. We were supposed to keep it in our shoe, and I could feel it when I walked on it. My mother had said, if you ever find yourself in any trouble, you use that money if you need it, or you call me, and I'll come to get you no matter how far away it is. You just call me. And so we set off for Hope Hole, Alabama, that red ribbon hanging in that mirror, hanging right over his rearview mirror. We passed old farms on those two-lane highways, that faded yellow line which runs between the lanes. It's old. These highways are rocky and uneven, and you can pass flat prairies filled with cattle and filled with peanuts and filled with cotton, and you can look up in the sky and see clouds stretching from here until eternity. There's certain things you can only see on an Alabama highway. You can't see them anywhere else. And when the sun had set, we were getting near Montgomery. Sun had set and the world had turned purple and the sky looked like someone had dusted silvery powder all over a purple sky. My cousin pulled over at an old saloon which was perched on the side of the road, built out of cinder blocks, with a sign out front that said, $3 pitchers of beer. I said, what are you doing? Because he was like me. Our mothers were Southern Baptists, but they had a touch of Pentecostal in them. And that meant that every now and then they would pray in tongues, not because they actually knew how to pray in tongues, but because they just kind of wanted to experiment with it, see how it felt. And they would say these things, and they would throw them into the middle of their prayers, which were in English sometimes while they were blessing the food. And my father would just kind of look at me with wide eyes. My mother would say, bless us, O Lord, for these thy gifts. Which we're about to receive. Amen. Shamalama ding dong. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. They were women who knew what 16-year-old boys were up to. And we knew right at that exact moment they was probably thinking about us and praying in tongues about us. And my cousin pulled over and he said, pitcher of beer, who can say no to that? And so we walked inside this joint, two 16-year-old boys. We had never done anything evil in our lives. And it felt oddly exciting to take that next step upward on the staircase of adulthood. We had never done anything that was wrong. Never. I mean, the closest thing I'd ever done anything was wrong. That was wrong was when I once put a black cat firework in the Methodist men's bathroom. But who's counting? We walked into this little place, and every eye was upon us. Every eye was upon us. My cousin and I had baby smooth faces, baby smooth skin, and round red cheeks. We sat on them stools, and that bartender looked at us with hard eyes. She was a hard woman with leathery skin, and she had a voice like a pack of Virginia Menthol Misty Slims, and she said, hello, doll. My cousin said, I will have a beer. She looked at him, she said, how old are you? He started to laugh. He said, how old am I? Well, I'm 22 years old. She nodded. She looked at me. She said, you want a beer too, I guess. I said, yes'm. She said, and how old are you? And I thought as fast as I could. I forgot that the drinking age was 21. I just picked the biggest number that came to my mind. I said, I'm 20. My cousin elbowed me. He said, no. What he really means is he's turning 21 today. He was 20 yesterday, but he's 21 now. We'll take our beers in a mug, please, ma'am. She said, looking at me with these hard eyes, what year was you born? And my cousin hung his head. Math has never been my strong suit. Math has never been my strong suit. And so I picked the wrong date. She said, get out of my bar. Get out of my bar right now. We walked outside back toward my cousin's truck, and there was a little old man out there. He was smoking a cigarette, and he was about 4'11" with white hair, and he stopped us. He smiled, and we saw a gold tooth in his mouth. He was an interesting man with a voice that was almost too deep for his body. He said, hey, boys, I heard what you was trying to do in there, and I got a little something-something for you if you're interested. And I don't check no IDs. My cousin looked at me. I looked at him. My cousin said, how much? And I elbowed my cousin and whispered, and I said, you don't even know what a something-something is. My cousin whispered to me. He said, I will once I figure out how much it costs. The man walked back to his trunk, and he opened up his trunk, and I had visions of waking up in the Stony Lonesome Sing Sing wearing County Orange. Me and my cousin, we'd have a roommate named Butch who would force us to cross-stitch little things for him to decorate the cell with. My cousin and I saw that man remove a milk jug from his trunk, and it was filled with a clear liquid. And my cousin said, is that moonshine? The man said, this is pure white lightning, son. Best in three counties. This stuff right here will put hair on your face. My cousin said, how much? He said, $25 for this whole thing. And that's a steal. You won't find that price from my competitors. My cousin looked at me. I looked at him. My cousin said, there's no way we can drink that, all that. He said, how about we just get half of it? The man looked around. He said, you want me to divide half this up? All right. But it'll be $20. And so he poured it into an old Heinz ketchup bottle, a rubber ketchup bottle. And then we reached into our shoes, and we paid that man $10 a piece, $20, and we got into our truck, and we left. We're driving through the night, and that little ketchup bottle full of moonshine sat in the bench seat between us, and we just looked at it. It was the most evil thing we had ever done. This moonshine was illegal, and it was sitting right there, and it gave us this little twinge of excitement mixed with total depression, because we knew we were making our mothers sad. What would they have thought if they'd known what we had done? We were feeling guilty, and this guilt was leading to us having images of our mothers sitting around the kitchen table reading their Bibles and praying in tongues to us. They were praying in tongues toward heaven, and they were praying, oh Lord, let these boys be safe and sound and holy. Hallelujah. And there was this moonshine between us. The most evil thing the devil has ever created. My cousin he took it and he placed it underneath the bench seat. He said, I can't look at it. And I knew exactly how he was feeling. I said, you realize we never took a taste of it? My cousin said, you think we should? I said, I don't know. I've heard that moonshine can make you go blind if it's not the good stuff. My cousin, he was feeling the same things I was feeling. It was fear. The only thing we knew about moonshine was when we had these family reunions, and these family reunions would take place down by the bay. Everybody would get together, and they would form an impromptu baseball game. And my Uncle Jether would sip moonshine from a mason jar. And one summer he had sipped too much moonshine, and he had played baseball so hard that he had gotten drilled in the head with the ball 3 times in a row, and it had changed him forever. And so any time in his life when he tried to pronounce his name, he would wet his pants and forget who he was for 30 seconds. And that's what we knew about moonshine. That's what we knew about moonshine. So we decided not to touch it. We drove into Montgomery. And we toured the city, toured the beautiful city. We visited Hank Williams' grave. Hank Williams' grave at night, and we ate Spam and mustard sandwiches while standing outside Hank Williams' grave. My cousin asked me to sing a little bit in respect. We removed our hats, and I sang, I was a fool to wander and stray, for straight is the gate and narrow the way. And my cousin elbowed me and said, can't you sing anything else? And so I sang. Hear that lonesome whippoorwill, he sounds too blue to fly. And there were some high school children. They were coming up behind us. We could see their headlights. We could hear them snickering out there at the Oakwood Cemetery in the middle of the night. They were snickering at us, singing and taking Hank Williams' grave so reverently. And my cousin said, would you shut up? We're kin to Audrey Williams here. Would you have some respect for the dead? And I made the sign of the cross, and I took a knee, and I faked some tears, because even though Audrey Williams is no more kin to us than 40 Mule Team Borax, I played along. And that next day, after we had eaten our food on the tailgate of his truck, and after we had taken a spit bath in a local truck stop, and we'd spent the night in the bed of his truck, we went to Hope Hole, Alabama, to visit Julie. We pulled up to this trailer in the middle of a field. It was a trailer which had been joined with another trailer, two mobile homes joined together side by side to make a double wide. And it had an impromptu porch built on the front out of old wood. Some of the wood was unfinished lumber, and some of the wood was finished lumber, and some of it was plywood that had been treated. It was a scrap wood porch. And there were several people sitting on the porch. Girls were braiding girls' hair, and boys were sitting on these chairs that looked like they'd come out of an old vehicle. And they were not chairs that belonged on a porch at all. And her father was sitting there. He was a large, gigantic man with big hands and broad shoulders. And he had hair growing on his neck that led down to his back, which probably led down to his hind parts. He was a hairy man. But he did not have hair on top of his head, just everywhere else. And he sat on that porch on the bench seat of an old car, watching a little black and white portable television sitting on a crate. And it was a baseball game playing. And my cousin and I pulled up, and my cousin looked at that hair ribbon hanging from the mirror, Julie's hair ribbon. And he looked downward at that little ketchup bottle. And we both did not want that thing in the car with us any longer. We felt like we were always looking over our shoulder at the police. Even though there were no police around us, our consciences were getting the best of us. And my cousin said, you know, I got an idea. And he took that ketchup bottle, and he took that hair ribbon, and he wrapped that hair ribbon around that ketchup bottle, and he tied it in a little bow, gift wrapped it. He said, you can't come and visit your girlfriend's presence without bearing gifts, right? I look at that man sitting on the porch, Julie's daddy. He had already stood, and he'd walked toward the porch, and he had a big wad in his lower lip, and he was spitting off that porch, brown spit, and he was looking right through the windshield at us. And I said, I guess a gift couldn't hurt none. We walked out of that truck, and we walked toward the porch, and Julie stood behind her father. He stood behind her father and my cousin. He just walked very, very casually toward them. My cousin had worn his nicest shirt and slacks. His slacks had been ironed by his mother. He'd kept them hanging on a hanger behind the seat for the entire truck ride for this occasion, and he was wearing penny loafers. It was a very strange sight to see. My cousin was normally a kid who wore jeans and a ratty t-shirt, but right now he looked like Mr. Rogers on his way to take communion. He looked every bit the Southern Baptist he was. He walked toward the porch holding his ketchup bottle in his hand. And that man came off the porch to greet him. He had a gruff voice. He said, you must be Julie's boy. My cousin nearly made a pile in his pants. His hand trembled. He said, I brought you something, sir. A gift. A man reached out and he took that clear bottle of clear fluid. And he grinned. He looked back at Julie and said, "Julie, why, your boy here has brought me a little something, something." My cousin looked at me and he gave me the thumbs up. He said, "Why, boy, maybe you's a lot smarter than I thought you was." That man unscrewed the cap of that ketchup bottle and he spit out a wad of chewing tobacco all over the ground. And he looked at this bottle, he held it up to the light. And then he brought that mouth of that bottle up to his lip and he took himself a big old pull. My cousin just kind of held his breath. And then that man leaned forward with his face turning purple and he spit it out all over the lawn. And he wheezed and he coughed and he said, "Water, water, water." And Julie said, "Daddy, Daddy, what is it? What is it?" And that man looked at my cousin. He said, "Who sold you this?" My cousin said, what do you mean? He said, "Why, there ain't nothing in here but kerosene." Summertime is an uncertain time when you take that step from being a child into adulthood. It's a scary time to take that step into being an adult. You don't know where it will lead you. You don't know what kind of trouble you're going to get yourself in. You don't know what kind of people you're going to meet on the road of life. But you got to take that step just the same. You got to take that step and watch the world turn another click to the right. Just make sure you don't buy any moonshine when you're on your way to Hopewell, Alabama. That's all for me. Thanks a lot for listening today. Hey, thanks for listening to Sean of the South. I'm your host today, Sean Dietrich. And man, it has been a pleasure coming to y'all. Hope you join us next week and maybe the week after that too if you ain't got nothing going on. Our music heard behind me today was Stuart Mason. He's a veteran man in the world of music. His authentic vocals and nimble skills on the guitar, mandolin, and banjo makes this guy a triple threat. He's a member of a Celtic band named Mahler's Revenge, and he performs in festivals in China, Scotland, Ireland, and the U.S. He also tours with an old-time bluegrass group called Little Black Train, which you have heard here today. Also, the Nordic Quartet, World String Project, and the duo he has with champion fiddler John Weed. To find out anything more about Stuart Mason, check out stuartmasonmusic.com or look him up on Google and see if you can't download some of his music. To find anything more about what I do, you can visit seanofthesouthshow.com. You can check out shows that date back clear to our first one all the way up to this one. All right, there, I hope you drop me a line because I love to hear from my friends. Send me birthday announcements, wedding invitations, grandparents' birthdays, announcements, bar mitzvahs, and anything else you can think of, funny stories, sad stories, or stories that have nothing to do with nothing. And I'll do my best to read them over the air if I am so inclined, because I love to do that sort of stuff for my friends. And speaking of friends, you might think that the world is all against you, but the truth is, the world is against everybody. So that means you're in good company. Adios.